To our podcast. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show with the best up-to-date information we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business and hope you feel the same way about us. Wouldn't you love to produce a show?
Sure you would.
All you have to do is email us at thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com to express your interest, and we will share with you all of the marketing opportunities you will get in exchange. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. With that, we welcome you to our show, The Business Behind Small Business. Whether you're selling or staying, we're here to remind you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone
and Tiffany Kao,
sharing the more finite details of entrepreneurship, revealing the dots between startup and success. No one gets to a million without getting a little dirty. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it.
I think you enjoy saying that line.
I so do. It's so fun. Like sometimes I feel like I'm on a Disney show or something and I'm like, come on,
with the hand gesture, for sure. A little bit of a Disney-esque kind of feel to it, though, right? Which is just another encouragement for our listeners to go watch us on video because you get to see all these lovely hand gestures.
Totally. Well, so speaking of which, maybe we should do a little bit of housekeeping. So one thing that our watchers will notice is that we are not in the same room anymore.
No.
We will be in the same room again. We're just not in the same room right now.
It's temporary.
It's temporary. So don't worry, my friends. We will be together again soon. But for right now, we are located separately. So we're just going to record like this until we are able to be together again.
I know. So far away.
Yeah. And, you know, we are also looking at opportunities for us to be in the same room as you. So we're cooking up some things right now, and we would love to hear from you. I mean, I get it if you don't want to sponsor a show, totally fine with me. But if there is something that you want us to talk about, or if you would love to see us do a workshop face-to-face, we're in Northern Virginia, and if our listeners are in Northern Virginia, that would be great. Or if you want to do something, let's say you're not in Virginia or anywhere near Virginia, but you want to do something remote, we are happy to do that as well. We want this to be an inclusive, also exclusive, inclusive arena for all of our exclusive guests. Hey. So if you have any ideas that you would love to see us bring to life, of course, let us know. So originally in our last show, we had planned to discuss dissecting success. How did those super rich get there? And what did they really do? However, Tiffany and I talked about it and we thought our listeners won't want to hear about how successful people are when things might not be working in the same way for you. I kind of feel like it's like when you're on a diet and you're in a forum and everyone's like, look at how much weight I lost. Look at how amazing I look. And you're like, that's great because I'm living on celery and I've lost 5 pounds.
Let's not flaunt that.
No, like I don't like that. So, and like we say in every show, success is not a straight line and it's difficult to take someone who's found success, measure it, and then apply the same tactics to your own trajectory. So we're going to stick to what we do best and give you advice on tools, not the map. In saying that, today's show will focus on finding your best clients, where they could be, how to maintain those relationships. But before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website. It should be referred to before and or after this podcast.
Yeah, such well done. What a good job.
Thank you. I'm attempting.
You've had enough practices.
You know, right? I'm hoping that when people are listening and we talk about all this like great stuff they're missing out on when they could be watching us on YouTube, they're like, maybe we should be watching these lovely ladies and all of Savannah's eye motions, because my eyes say so much. So
eyes, eyebrows, very much so. She's very expressive person.
Very difficult for me to keep my feelings off my face.
But so, I feel like you do it. Do you do it consciously or no. Is this very unconscious? Okay. I mean, I'm the same way. People tell me I'm super expressive. Like I cannot play poker because if I'm like mad or unhappy or super excited, like it just like shows up on my face and I'm like,
I can't stop.
Yeah.
I can't make it stop. Yeah. So you might want to see this because.
Just saying. I mean, we're working on our video. It's getting better per episode. Eventually we'll get there.
Eventually.
Don't forget, we still have our full-time businesses to run. So this right? is not our full-time gig. So, you know, exactly. A lot of it is a little bit of a scramble to get it together enough to do an episode, including all the scripting and all the research and everything like that. But it is a lot of fun. Like you said, we don't, you know, we're going to keep doing this. So just let us know what you guys want to hear.
That's right.
All right. You want to talk about finding your best clients?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Okay. So mind you, we started by saying finding your best clients, right?
Right.
So best clients is going to look different for everybody. So I'm going to go over kind of how to figure out what your best clients look like, because then from that, you can actually go look for them.
Right.
So let's start at the basics, which is what does a good client look like? Let's not even go best yet. Let's just go good client, right? What is the characteristics of a good client? Now, when you're a new business, trust me, you're going to struggle with this. We all have, where we don't know what a good client looks like because we're saying yes to everybody and every single source of revenue possible. Mm-hmm. And we take on a lot of bad clients, and you will learn this lesson the hard way unless you listen to us, and hopefully you can avoid some of that. So what does a good client look like? One, first of all, they make you money. When you're in business, the need for profit margin is real. Okay. Not only do you need to pay the cost to provide the service or product you made, you also need to make enough to cover a portion of everything else you have to pay for to keep your lights on in your business. So they got to make you enough money.
Right.
Next, they have to respect the value that you are bringing to the table. So let's just say, for example, you are a personal fitness trainer who decided to go out on your own and work with clients one-on-one. And clients would trust your expertise, would follow your advice, follow your workout, follow maybe some nutrition plans that you give them, and they'll regularly communicate with you. So you get feedback, you know how they're doing, you know what the progress is, you know what their challenges are, so you can be there to help them. So this is really a sign of their respect for your knowledge and the value you bring to the table. And I mean, the great thing is not only does it make your job really rewarding because I mean, come on, who, you know, we all got into this to help somebody else, right? Uh-huh. It also helps reinforce the value that you're bringing each and every time. So, you know, maybe you're not a personal fitness trainer. You can go ahead and replace that with maybe you're a bookkeeper. Maybe you're a business coach, maybe you're a social media manager, maybe you're a branding manager, whatever the case may be, you want a client to respect the value you're bringing. And if they do respect the value that you bring to the table, then they're a good client.
Right.
All right. So the last thing I will say about what a good client looks like, which Savannah, I think you will enjoy this, is that one, they hold you accountable for delivering the value you say you would bring or the product, whatever it is.
Right.
And they also hold themselves accountable, especially if you have a service that is dependent on actions they need to take.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So let's just say that you run into a client and they have very high expectations, which is good because they're communicating this to you and it'll push you to actually explore maybe new technology or new techniques to do what you do better. Mm-hmm. This client is going to hold you accountable for delivering and meeting those high expectations. But at the same time, they should also hold themselves accountable by giving you timely feedback, paying your bills on time, and openly communicating any kind of questions or responding to any kind of questions you may have or things that they need, that you need their attention on.
Right.
And, you know, hence the word timely.
Right.
Yes. Mm. All right. So in review, good clients means they make you money, they respect the value you bring, and they hold you as well as themselves accountable in the relationship. Okay. So when you find a good client, you'll definitely feel that synergy, right? Like, you know that somebody's a good client, and then eventually you'll quickly realize when somebody's not a good client too.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's all about the way they make you feel.
Exactly, exactly. So once you go from once you have the good client, then you can go from good to best. Mm-hmm. So now let's build on top of the good client characteristics. And let's start learning on these things, which is, one, start thinking about what is it that your client does. So for example, if your business is a business to business type of business, then what kind of business do your clients run? If you are a business to consumer business, then, you know, maybe what occupation do they have? Are they like a W-2 employee? Are they a freelance contractor? Are they a stay-at-home parent? So this goes in a little bit in detail about kind of narrowing down on who is the best client for you.
Mm-hmm. Like where they're coming from.
Exactly, where they're coming from. Next, you know, when does your client need your particular product or service? You know, is there a season in their business or life where they'll need you and what you provide? Or is it at any time? Now, I will say that for most everybody's product or service, it isn't everybody in any time. There is something very specific, and your price point and what you specifically do and how you go about doing it will kind of narrow that down for you. Mm-hmm. The next thing is, why do they need your product and service, right? Start thinking about how their needs align with the result that you bring to the table, because this is a strong motivator for them to not only be your best client, but to be your best client in the long run.
Right.
And then last but not least, you know, who are they, you know, as a person in business or in their personal lives, right? Their hobbies and their habits of your best client can really help inform you to where we're getting to today, which is how to find them. Mm-hmm. Now, after you've answered all those questions, you're starting to identify who your best client is. Then you want to start asking yourself the questions of where to find them. Now, Savannah's going to go, you're going to go into much deeper details where to go find your best clients.
Right.
You know, but a lot of what we talked about above is really helping you hone in on trying to figure out, well, where do your clients hang out at and how mm-hmm. can you find them, right? Well, who are the people, the opportunities and experiences that you can make yourself present at to be able to interact and hopefully, you know, get the best client for your business. Mm-hmm. All right. So I think, Savannah, you're going to go over exactly where to find them.
Right. So I thought I would start from ground zero. And
that's give where a we like bit... to start.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought I would start with ground zero in definitions to help a person better understand where customers and clients, where you would find the best customers, where you would find the best clients. So in business, like I say, customers and clients. Now, my definition of a customer is transactional, and it's generally relating to a product. These people will come to you based on perhaps reputation, word of mouth, or convenience, like you're conveniently located.
So like retail and e-commerce kind of deals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come back and sometimes they don't. Now, a client is relationship focused, and they plan to have you as their number one person in this one particular service or product that they are requesting. So sometimes a client relates to a product as well, especially if that product is repeatable. To me, a customer holds quality over emotion when it comes to a product or service, and a client holds emotion over quality in a product or a service.
Ooh, so that's now, good. Yeah.
Hey.
So maybe start out with trying to figure out if you're looking for your best customer or your best client.
Client. Exactly. So yes. And you know, you're probably wondering what I mean by quality emotion. Okay. So maybe you have a favorite restaurant, or if you want to buy something that you don't buy often, but you do buy from one particular place because they seem to always have the best version of that thing. You don't care about the way they make you feel. You don't care about how they cater to your emotion. You just care about the quality, right? So now let's consider you're a tailor or maybe a dentist, but maybe you know that there are better tailors or dentists out there, but you really like how they know you and how they make you feel. So if you equate persons that you go or businesses that you go to quite often, you are their client, right? And you go to them because of how they make you feel, not necessarily because they are the best, right? So where you're going to find people that with that will value your product or service. And if they give you an opportunity to, you can make them feel like the most special person in the world.
True.
Well, yeah. There are networking events you could go to. I personally wouldn't say yes, but you could. Especially if you are in the business to business business.
Well, if you're also starting up and nobody really knows you, you probably want to show your face around a little bit.
And
start building those relationships. Sivan is like,
ew. Anyway, I shouldn't say that because
there are good networking opportunities out there. They're not all bad.
Anyway, referrals.
You're still burnt out, I see, by them.
So much so. Okay, so referrals and referral partnerships do go a long way. However, you do have to be strategic about the kind of partnerships you make. So again, I'm talking about business to business here. Yeah. So think about your best customer or your best client and what their background is, much like what Tiffany said. I'll give you an example for me. Now, my best customers or clients, and when I say customer in my industry, oftentimes it'll be, you know, somebody that a CPA will be like, hey, I have to do these guys' taxes, but his books are a shambles. Will you just do the books they'll likely never come back. However, the CPA is important to me. So having a relationship with a CPA is very important to me because I have to think about where my customers and my clients are going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
Now you think about where your customers and clients are coming from. Don't think about the UA, client B. There is always UA, something that's pulling them B, client C. What is that B in between you and the client? Are they coming from web searches? Maybe the web search is the B that is in between the two of you.
Some kind of middleman or middleware,
something.
Right?
It's always going to be something or someone. So if they're coming from web searches, you'll want to strengthen your presence on the web. If most of your clientele is coming from referrals, but you're not sure exactly where most of your referrals are coming from. And I say this because it happened to me. I took all of my clients, I put them in a spreadsheet, and then I did some research to see who sent that client to me, right? A lot of them came from CPAs, but I didn't realize how many came from business coaches and other bookkeepers and marketing firms. That was weird. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I never thought about that. I bet if you did some research, you would be surprised as to where a lot of your great customers and great clients are coming from. Now, when I say making a spreadsheet, I'm not saying you've got 1,000 people. No, you know in your head that you've got 10 to 20, let's say 20, really good clients or really good customers. Those are the ones I'm talking about because you want to replicate that.
And those are the ones we were saying has those three characteristics that you'd love working with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now let's say your customers are coming from everywhere. You really cannot pinpoint one stream, if you will. But then you'll have to do a healthy amount of marketing across the board. Now, I'll say paid advertising is a hit and miss. However, you may want to do paid advertising just to kind of push things along a little bit better, just to, there's not going to be a whole lot much more movement based on that, but people will recognize. It's just a little bit more recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is inundated with information all of the time, including yourself. Think about how much information you have to plug into every time you put your phone in your face. So you got to think about what it is that sticks with you. What is it that you stop scrolling on to watch?
Yeah.
Because likely that's going to be what sticks with someone else. And I'm not talking about the cat videos or the dog videos. I'm talking about there have been times when I have stopped on an advertisement and I'm like, ooh, well, that's interesting. And either I'll find out more where it says find out more or I'll send it to my husband or to a friend where I'm like, ooh, I know that person would really like this.
Well, it's, and I think part of what you were saying with the hit and miss is, also that usually you need a set aside amount of money to play with to do this, right? Because again, like you said, people are inundated information. So it's not like they see your ad the first time they're going to click on it. It's probably by the 10th time when they're kind of I've had those moments when I'm like, oh, it got me. Let me click on it. You know, because I've seen it like 10, 20 times and I'm like,
exactly.
Yeah. I get it. I'm interested. Right. That so like each time somebody scrolls through, each time your ad appears, depending on what platform you're on, like you're paying for each of those like instances and impressions and things like that. So like it does cost a budget, but again, it goes back to where is your best client? Because if your best client isn't online looking for stuff, then you probably shouldn't do that.
Exactly. And I'm going to get to that. So, and that, funny enough, that's how I ended up with the solo stove. Because I was like, I'm sick and tired of seeing these doggone things. What is this thing about? And I'm like, ooh, this is exactly what I want. So, and it does work. But, you know, it was only a few years ago when everyone went from the written word to photos and videos were not a consideration. And now everyone is posting videos as a way to market their product or service. But I get it if that's not you, because truly, that's not everybody. No. But if you're on LinkedIn and a lot of your clientele come from LinkedIn, or perhaps have a LinkedIn, maybe they're not coming from LinkedIn, but they're LinkedIn kind of people, then you got to make yourself known more on LinkedIn. Same thing as Facebook, same thing as Instagram, or anywhere else as far as social media goes.
And they all have different demographics.
They absolutely do. Right? LinkedIn is going to be more the zipped up corporate types.
Yeah.
Facebook is going to be the Gen Xers and the millennials who are you know, a little bit more whatever. And then Instagram is going to be a little, you know, Facebook is a little more like, I don't remember what they call it, but it's like the older demographic.
It's not flattering, whatever word they call it. It's not flattering.
It's not. And Instagram is going to be the younger demographic.
Well, then you have TikTok.
Right. And then you have TikTok, which, which, you know, I'm on TikTok, and I use my TikTok. I cross the TikTok with our BBSB Instagram, and then I put it on our story. And so, you know, that's what I do for us, but I also do the same thing for my company and for myself. So I do a lot of cross marketing because a lot of my people are on those places.
Yeah. Because I feel like TikTok is more youngish.
I would say it's like the younger millennials
and much more casual. Like LinkedIn is more buttoned up for sure. But then TikTok is definitely like the least, like the most casual of all of those platforms.
Absolutely. TikTok's going to be the Z's, the Zillennials, and then the Alphas.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what it is that you've got. So if you have a brick and mortar and you are in a place and you are selling products, I highly suggest you have special events. If you are in a small town or in a downtown area, get involved in the local charitable events or local farmers market. If it takes place on the street that your business, or maybe it's in the vicinity of where you are, local community events, local charitable events, build really good relationships with the businesses that surround you. For a business to business, you may have to do a lot of coffees and lunches and any other kind of touch bases with
especially people. If it's referral based.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, because let's say you have a brick and mortar, but you're still a service provider. Same thing. Like you're going to have to seek out what that B is between the A and the C, you being A, C being client. So now keep in mind that it is well known in the marketing world that it generally takes about 2 years to build a reputation and about 20 seconds to kill one.
Oh, that's real. Oh no, my gosh, that is real. It does take 2 years, 18 months to 2 years, I would say. Yes. Even if you've been around a block before and people know who you are, take it from a girl who had to reinvent for herself, right? It still takes 18 months to 2 years for some reason before things kind of start jiving and people like know you.
So market wisely, connect as well as you can, and make sure you do a little bit of everything within the parameters of whatever that B that I've been talking about is, because that's what's going to make you successful. Do not throw out a wide net.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's like you need to identify who your best clients look like before you can even decide where they're going to go be.
And you know what? It might also be that there's networking events for all kinds of industries, right? So, you know, it could be like, let's say you're in I don't know, you do payroll and you are specifically in restaurants, there's restaurant networking groups that you could join, or you can even go to their events. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do, but just know that these things exist. You don't have to go to a generalized networking event or a generalized happy hour simply because you feel like you might, you need to like get out there. That was the mistake I made. I spent a lot of time going to completely inefficient networking events.
Yes.
And then when I started to like connect to the people that were getting me to my clients, that was when I started to find a little more success. So
yeah, I would say that with the general ones, like it's a great space if like, you know, you're new to networking and you haven't quite figured out how you're going to introduce yourself and what you do and how you want to say things. Like those are great events to go to because you get to such a wide variety of people to practice on. But quickly you'll realize, it's like Savannah is saying, is the fact that you don't have enough time to waste. Right. You need to get to the point. And so you start drilling in on very specific events that is best for your clientele. Like say, for example, you're a photographer who wants to specialize in headshots. Mm-hmm. Well, it probably will behoove you to go to say a realtor specific event. You know, realtors still love to put their headshots on their cards. Every one of them wants one. And so that would be like a gold mine for you versus you kind of randomly going to like maybe your local BNI or like a chamber event. Like it would just be another layer of efficiency for you to find your best clients.
Right. In conclusion, the best advice I can give to anyone, and this is foolproof, I will die on this hill, is that a person will be a repeatable customer or client based on how you stimulate one of their five senses. If you have a brick and mortar, make sure it smells good, it looks good, the aesthetics are totally there, you have stimulating music, and yes, there's a whole rabbit hole you can go down about music and how it affects sales. If there is food involved, how it tastes, and this is when I say how you make them feel. If you are a remote company or you are a service-based business, again, it's how you stimulate a sense. People will always come back if they feel special.
So then if you're a remote worker, I suppose it is how you write and how you sound on the phone.
Well, I mean, we do our remote, we do a lot of video as well. And yeah, the way that you make them feel.
Just the experience.
Yeah, the way you make them feel. You're communicating with them. You are giving them things that are going above and beyond what they've asked for. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making them feel special. So it's no different than when we go, if we go back to what you started with think about the clients that you really like the really good clients. And I said, you know, it's how they're making you feel.
Yeah.
It goes the same way. Like if you've got great clients that you just love, and every time you think about them, you're like, oh my God, that's the perfect client. Like Tiffany and I were just talking about that before we started recording. Like, I love this client. If they make me feel really good, then that's the kind of feeling I should be giving my clients as well. Clients or customers. But if you stimulate a sense, whatever that sense may be, and I'm going to get to an example of a stimulating sense and how that works when we get into the raw truth.
Okay. Are we headed there now?
We are. But before we move on to the raw truth, we want you to be a part of our conversation and let us know what you want to hear. Send us questions or comments to our email, thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com, to ask questions related to our show, or just let us know how much you love us. We want to give you what you want to learn about. So now we're going to get to the raw truth, where we each share our own gritty experience with today's topic. We want the listeners to know that success isn't easy, it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. We hope you'll hear our cautionary tales and learn from them, or aspiring. I mean, it could be inspiring too.
I mean, we're talking about best clients here. I would imagine it would be aspiring instead.
Yeah, I'm going to go with aspiring. We hope you will hear our aspiring tales.
Just for this episode, though. It's cautionary every other episode.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Learn from our mistakes.
Yes. What you got for me?
Ooh, you know what? I have like an all-time best client from my last business. You know, I mean, we're not naming any names here, right? Good or bad, because you don't want the other side to feel terrible.
Totally. Yes.
Well, no, I actually have been fortunate. I've had a handful of like very best clients that I got to work with. And like I said, like, you know, they, you know, hit all those marks, you know, they They were profitable, which was great. They always paid on time, which is amazing, right? They respect, you know, what we asked for, and then also vice versa. We had mutual respect for them. And they lasted a long time as clients, mm-hmm. all the way up until, you know, we sold the company and stuff like that, but they stayed with, because I think it was such a synergetic like relationship. Mm-hmm. And, quickly, you know, once you identify those customers, like, you'll know, like, I think it took me a couple of years. The first couple of years were kind of bummers. And all sorts of terrible clients.
Yeah.
People who wouldn't, wouldn't pay on time. People who never gave you what you asked for, but then also would turn around to tell you how to do your, you know, specialty, which makes no sense, right? Yeah. I'm sure you ran into people like right?
Yep.
And you're like constantly chasing them for things all the time. And you just, you know, you're just kind of like, why am I doing all this? And then once you get that good client, you're like, oh, I remember why I'm doing all this. This is the reason why I'm doing all this, right? But like, it took me a few years to really, you know, discern who's a good client. And then I started sensing them out pretty fast. I mean, there were definitely clients that I've had prospect meetings, or not clients, but prospect meetings with, that I quickly found a way to end that before it started, right? Because you're like, oh, I can see this coming. I know what this is going to turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I think I've told this story before, and if I haven't, then I will tell it now. So back in the late 90s, I kind of fell into being a dance music artist, and I had a booking agent who was absolutely brilliant. Now, I use the word booking agent very loosely. He was just like one of my friends who just was in the scene, and it was a different time. Anyway, this guy, he was so, so amazing, and he was so ahead of his time. And he was just one of my good friends. So he became my booking agent. I had recorded a song with a very, very well-known DJ producer, and my backup singers were also just legendary disco artists. It was a dream to do this song with this producer. However, the song didn't really have my name on it. It had me featured as an artist on it. Also, the record label decided not to release it as a single. And of course, back then, the only way to market a song was really through DJs. You know, this is prior to all internet things. So
prior to, how far do we want to go back here, right? Prior to iTunes, prior
all,
to
all of the things, MySpace, Friendster, YouTube,
yeah, Winamp. What else was there?
So this is 1998. So my booking agent decided to start getting me on any stage, and I use very loosely stage.
Anything that was a raised platform, is that what you're saying?
And sometimes they were.
Yeah. Okay.
He would get me anywhere he could get me, right? So, but before you know it, I had been invited by Billboard, and I was featured as one of the best new emerging dance artist or something like that. Something along those lines. I can't even remember anymore. It was so long ago. But I was featured, and it was so amazing because Lisa from Lisa Lisa and the Cult Jam, who I was like completely in love with, was the one who introduced me. It was like a dream come true. Now this is a song that had no backing from a record label. I was not signed to a record label. I had no real representation. And yet somehow the song had taken off like crazy. It was being played all over the place. It was in London, in Portugal, Ibiza, and even in Israel. Like, we were hearing from people everywhere. And I was touring the whole US. It all started because my booking agent had said, we have to stimulate their senses. These people in the nightclubs, they're either drunk or they're coked out. And, you know, usually when an artist would go on at a club, it was always at the height of the night. So I would go on at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
The people are probably pretty like
totally blasted, right?
Yeah.
So he was like, they're not going to remember you. They might not even realize someone's on the stage, because sometimes I wasn't on a stage, right? Yeah. So he had this deal with the DJs that every time they played my song, a scent would be kind of blasted through the vents.
Yeah, because really, your memories related to the smell, yeah.
And so through him, like, he was friends with all of the big DJs at the time. And you know, back then DJs were rock stars and they didn't, you know, and I started to be friends with them too. So like literally every time my song would get played or every time that I was performing, the scent, now I don't even know what scent it was, to be honest. It could have been something like Nag Champa or something. I don't know what it is, but I kid you not, people to this day say that every time they smell this, because he also said it had to be something that wasn't too like a vanilla or something like that. So it
wasn't
that,
too common.
No, it common. He wanted
it to be common.
Yeah. He was like,
I thought he wanted uniquely, like,
no, because he was like, because I want every time they smell this,
call it as often as possible.
And he wanted it to be general enough, which is why I was like, maybe it was Nag Champa, because that was really big in the late 90s.
Oh.
Or vanilla or something like that. He was like, but every time somebody, they say, every time I smell that scent, anytime it wafts by me, I think about your song. So, I mean, I can't believe how popular I became with no YouTube, no TikTok, no social media, no record label, just the power of scent and the DJs that played the music. And this stuck with me, obviously, to this day, because it really is a foolproof example as to how sales and feelings are so interconnected.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wouldn't it be great to hear the sound of us promoting your business for you right here on our show? Of course it would. You can have that and more by producing a show or multiple shows. All you have to do is email us at thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com to express your interest, and we will share with you what you will receive with your investment. You'll have the opportunity to have your name and the name of your business mentioned multiple times on our show, having your company logo on our social media, along with details on how to get in touch with you and other marketing opportunities as well. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. I'm going to move on to the famous example. Now, in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale, revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspired us and have inspired today's discussion.
Well, I'm going to use one of my favorite famous person, mm-hmm. which you probably heard me talk about before, which is Sarah Blakely of Spinks.
Yes.
Billion dollars. Pretty sure she's been on Forbes.
Insane.
Billion with a B.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also in the late 90s, while Savannah was being played in all of the nightclubs and the DJs.
Yeah, I was shaking my tushy in the nightclubs.
Yeah. Worldwide too. Mm-hmm. Miss Blakely. Miss Blakely was having a very, very opposite experience, and she was selling fax machines from door to door in Florida. I mean, still, like, amazing. I don't even know how you sell fax machines door. I mean, come on, right?
I can't believe that happened. Like,
well,
that was a thing.
Well, in the 90s, they also had selling knives from door to door. That was a thing too. I forget what the company was called.
My husband used to sell water coolers door to door.
Yeah. So, I mean, people learn amazing like sales skills because come on, you're going to have amazing sales skills to like, you know, deal with that.
For
but
sure.
Basically, so she was selling fax machines and she kept kind of like seeing the fact that for mostly women, of course, undergarments tend to show up, especially on white pants. It's not a very smooth like surface when you're wearing white pants. And so she ended up investing all the money she had in the world, which was $5,000 then, to basically develop a prototype and be able to sell that and patent that, actually. She actually patented it herself because she didn't have money to hire a lawyer. And so she, you know, a lot of people were saying that, you know, in order to get known, you have to go to trade shows because that's where all the buyers are and things like that. And I can't recall if she actually went or not, but definitely the trade shows weren't successful for her.
Right.
And the way most people launched their product is they went to trade shows after trade shows after trade shows.
A lot of convention going.
Exactly. Back in the day, right? Because again, we don't have all this virtual stuff we have
now. You have to do everything by hand and by foot and by mouth.
Exactly. And then somehow she kind of realized, she was like, you know, thinking that, you know, the people she really do want to reach out to who would be her best clients are people who are these buyers of these huge like department stores. Right. And they're not going to trade shows. right? The head of purchasing for so-and-so company is not going to trade shows. So instead, mm-hmm. she did the opposite thing, which is she ended up picking up the phone and just calling. And she was able to book an appointment with Neiman Marcus, the lady who was in charge of Neiman Marcus, who became her first best client. And not only she had to be really bold about it by calling them up, she actually had to fly there. And then when she was in a room with them, she couldn't quite explain what her product did. So she literally took the woman into the bathroom to basically show her wearing a product underneath her white pants to show her what it Spanx actually did. And that landed her the deal. So Neiman Marcus bought into Spanx and displayed it at their store, and they became her best client.
And the rest was history.
Yeah. $1 billion history.
Can't I think of something like that? All right. Now you can love me, you can hate me. You could also love her or you could hate her. But I have never in my life seen someone as brilliant at marketing than Taylor Swift.
You know, they have like actual university classes about the marketing power she has, right? Like mm-hmm. it's undeniable whether you like her or not. Her team's got to figure it out.
Yes, she is a marketing genius. And the way
like
she
tells the Swift effect, right? I think they call it.
I think it's called the Swift effect or something yeah. along those lines. And yes, these business classes are tailored to Taylor. I did find some great articles that are going to be linked in our show notes for you to dive into a little more after our show. But in the meantime, I thought I would share some key points with you about Taylor Swift. Everything Taylor Swift does, literally everything she releases, holds a bookmark to what is coming next. These are sometimes little Easter eggs or just simply little clues, but literally every song she releases holds the key to the next thing. In doing that, people mm-hmm. are always waiting to see what's next. Now, granted, this is not a new revelation level strategy. I mean, Disney's been doing it for years. However, she's taken it and made it a part of her entire culture and entire community. Like Disney does it with like their movie. It's not their entire culture and community. Taylor's is. Not one thing she does stands alone or apart from any other thing she does. Everything is connected. So if you want to know what's next in her perfume, you'll have to buy a record. And if you want to know what's next in her, I don't know, does she have a clothing line? You'll have to buy her perfume. It's like, if you want to know this, then you have to buy that. And if you want to know that, then you have to buy that. And like they're all touched to each other. Every one of them. It's absolutely genius. So if you're into Taylor, you have to buy into all of it. Think about the most impactful time of your life. This was probably the ages between 13 and 18. Like, this is the age that shaped your personality and your view of the world. Mm-hmm. Psychologists and doctors have written so many books about the importance of your experiences between these ages. Some would say that most of Taylor Swift's fan base are between those ages, but nay, nay, I say, her songs speak to the part inside of all of us that experienced something she speaks of in her songs that happened to us between the ages of 13 and 18. Again, we go back to feelings. Her music has evolved just as her age has. And you know, not all of her songs are talking about high school. They don't talk about high school. However, mm-hmm. she still manages to touch upon the emotional place we were all in our teen years. And so we can always relate to her music, whether we like it or not. Like every song is tied to something we've experienced.
I see. Well, look, I have friends who are fans of, I'm not a personal fan, but like I have friends who are just, I think it's like, there's no, like you either, you're not a fan of her or you're like an extreme diehard fan of hers. Right. Where they're super excited about like everything
yes.
she does, everything. And it's quite interesting to see that effect.
Yes.
Apparently my upbringing must not have been normal because I can't relate to half the songs.
Well, you know, like it's funny because I can relate to them either through my friends have experienced it, mm-hmm. or I experienced it in later years, because yeah. your growing up and my growing up was pretty much the same.
Yeah.
In that, you know, like dating, no.
Yeah. I can't relate to any of the dating stuff in school.
But there's a lot of other things that she sings about that I'm like, ooh, yes, yes. Tell them, girl. Anyway, so I'll add one more. She's strategically partnered with the right people that have introduced her to all new audiences. Now, this goes back to the whole networking thing, mm-hmm. partnerships, like referral partnerships. And one of the most brilliant partnerships she has is with AMC Theaters.
Mm.
So, like I said, I could go on, but I won't. There are a lot of great blogs and articles written about her strategies and how you can translate them into your own business. And you say team, I truly believe that these are coming from Taylor Swift. I believe that it's not a team that's doing it.
It's true.
It's implementing it.
Yeah.
Because from the jump, this woman has been, like, literally since she was much, much younger and she was talking about tears on her guitar, she was very calculating in how she marketed herself and how she appeared to everyone and where she did her concerts and how she did her concerts. And she didn't have a team at that time. It was just her and her mama.
Well, so, yeah. And at the same time, too, even in she had a team, you know, to be this massive of a success, like, you know, she has to have a hand in it, right? Like, she can't just be hands off. And for it to sustain this long.
Yes.
It's not by chance or by all luck. Maybe in the beginning, a little bit luck, but, like, you know, most of it is to be for this to be so sustainable. I mean, she's got to have some conscious, like, decision making, like,
you know,
opportunities in there, which it makes it even far more, you know, interesting. So that's why, you know, I may not be a personal fan of her, but I still acknowledge and recognize, you know, what she's done. And it is brilliant, right?
Yes.
It's absolutely brilliant. She's so young.
She's so young. She supports small businesses, mm-hmm. which gives her she supports small businesses. She has real relationships with her fans. This is where that whole, I mean, she really makes people feel good.
Yeah. I mean, she has a positive energy, which is nice.
And she's had fans that she's had since the beginning. And there's that retaining again.
I will say that I do like the fact that for somebody so famous, she's such a good role model. You know what I mean? Like I think she makes sure that she's a positive influence on the many young ladies who look up to her and whatnot, where she could have taken it totally a different direction, as a lot of celebrities do, right? Take it a completely mm-hmm. different direction just for the fame and the attention.
Yeah.
She, you know, didn't take the easy way out, and she's such a positive role model for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, be it that maybe when she started, she was young, she didn't understand how to do this, and maybe she had a great idea and strategy that ended up working in the long run. But you mm-hmm. bet that her team, when they did come along, sat there and thought real hard about who her best customers are and what would appeal to them. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is not just let's throw spaghetti at the wall, but they knew exactly the demographics. I bet they can even describe to you exactly what the ideal listener and fan looks like. So they can basically create this whole experience around mm-hmm. that, you know, whatever you want to call it, buyer's persona, customer avatar, whatever the words are, right? It's all the same thing. It's just, you know, who are they, what they do, what they like, what they listen to, what's the experience that's going to stick with them. Yeah.
And I would say that, okay, when she had her team, and, you know, you may be listening to this and saying, well, I don't have a team, it's just me. But you do actually have a team. Think about who it is that you bounce ideas off of. And if you mm-hmm. don't have anyone you bounce ideas off of, then see if you can be a part of a mastermind. I mean, I found being a part of a mastermind was very beneficial to me when mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out how to evolve my company from where it was to what it became. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be someone that you can share ideas with.
But it could be at least one person. Otherwise, you can't really.
Right. I mean,
you can. Like, it's just that much tougher to try to do this in a void by yourself.
Right.
And not speak it out loud
mm-hmm.
to somebody else and kind of flush out the idea. But it is a lot of fun, though. I mean, even worst case scenario, if you're by yourself, grab a piece of paper, write down the questions to ask yourself about how to kind of, you know, define this, like, define your best client. I mean, go, you know, rewind what you're listening to now, yeah, and just go through the questions we talked about in the beginning and define, yeah, that for yourself and start a framework and then start, mm-hmm, talking to other people about it.
Yep.
You can absolutely do it by yourself. You don't need a whole multi-million dollar team, yes, to surround you to get started and, you know, start looking for your best client, making sure all your marketing effort is not just dollars wasted.
Right.
Because we ain't got money like Taylor Swift to waste.
I mean, no.
It would, okay, be nice to have a bank account with that many zeros one day. Ugh, although, standard, mind you, though, I mean, that fame, and you probably know this better than I would because you've actually tasted the fame, mm-hmm, is it comes with a lot of responsibilities and burdens.
Yes.
So it's not like it's just, you know, that freewheeling and like she's, yeah, like, you know, she's handling it well, but I'm sure she has a lot of pressure on her.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't want to, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now, but I'll tell you, it wasn't a scene I wanted to, it wasn't, repeat, a path I was interested in because, yeah, of how much I would have to give up. And, yeah, anyway,
yeah,
I do have other recommendations for you because there's a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. And we're going to drill down a bit further here to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources that can take you to the next level. You like that segue? Yeah,
I do. Well done again.
Thank you.
It's like riding a bike again, getting back into this whole, you know, doing this remotely, you at your place, me at my place, doing this over like screen without actually just turning around and seeing you.
I know. I hate to admit, I kind of like it like this though.
You don't want me to be in the same room?
I mean, maybe we could be in the same room, but like you're in a different screen than me.
So you're just like, get out of my shot. That's what you're saying. Get out of my,
I don't,
shot,
know. I like both ways, but I like this too. I don't know. I haven't decided.
You know what we need to do is we need to interject it every once in a while with like an in-person togetherness and then, yeah, and then do this, right? Because there is something to be said about doing it remotely like this, right? Like I think in the beginning, we felt like it was a little bit like awkward, but like, yeah, over time now that we've gotten more comfortable, uh-huh, I mean, what? We're like in our 70 something episode at this point, right? Like that's a lot of episodes to, totally, practice this over and over again.
Yeah.
So I like the hybrid. I like going back and forth. Like
I like, I it too.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, if, yeah, you have thoughts on it, you know where to find us.
Yeah. Or, you know where to leave a comment and you know where to press that thumbs up and 5 stars and,
right,
all that stuff, all that, mm-hmm, fun stuff though. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as far as recommendations, yeah, honestly, you know, taking the time to sit down and figuring out what your customer avatar is super important.
Yep.
There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of books out there about how to do this. So again, you know, and you can also Google it. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
I would also even say go to ChatGPT and be like, what questions do I need to ask myself to build a customer avatar for my business?
Yeah.
And, you know, that way you can at least have a question that's going to be a guide for you to kind of flush this out in your head. But if you're looking for books, there are books out there. There's a book called Buyer's Persona, mm-hmm, by Adele Rivella. And it's, you know, a very detailed approach and actionable approach to figuring out what your buyer's persona looks like. So, you know, all of this is when you hear these words, buyer's persona, customer avatar, typically it's in the realm of marketing because, I mean, you're trying to attract your best clients, mm-hmm, right? So it's always around marketing in a sense, but you can take it a step farther. Like Savannah says, it's not just about the initial attraction of customers. You can take it farther and figure out how to not only attract your best customers, but maybe turn a good customer into your best customer and then our best client, and then how to retain them, mm-hmm, through the experience or the 5 senses, like, you know, Savannah was talking about, which I find kind of fascinating. You should write a book about that.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, 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 okay. That's cool. All right. Yeah, anyways, we'll see if we edit this out. It's gonna keep going though. Other than that, I would also say that once you figure out who your buyer's personas is, try to interact with them in real life, mm-hmm, because it's usually far cheaper than online, even, mm-hmm, though it does take up a little bit more time, right? But so just be specific, you know, pick your industries, go online, Google and figure out in your local area what kind of events are there, what they're targeted for, and make sure who they're targeting to fits the people that you're likely looking for. And then you can go out to those events and see if you can kind of either find your best clients or best customers, or like Savannah says, find a B to your C. Right? Yes. Did I get that right? From the B, your A.
Find the B to your C.
To find the B to your C.
Yeah. I like it, and I'm going to stick to it. I just got to find what word could start with a B, because C is client. And
well,
a
there's
is...
a lot of words that start with a B, but I can't think of any good ones right now.
Right? Mine's always in the gutter. It's horrible.
Oh, and, it's getting late. So
I know. Well, I don't have any books or apps to recommend, but some of my suggestions are going to be very much aligned with Tiffany's, and that is to align yourself with the businesses that are most like yours and those that your clients would find most useful. Networking doesn't have to be going to boring events or happy hours. They can be aligning yourself and creating a group of like-minded businesses that can work together to share clients. The added bonus to your client is that you all know each other, and not only have each other's back, you have the clients as well. Tiffany and I had that kind of alignment for years, and look at us now.
And ours was really informal. It's not like we were sitting in a lead share group together or anything like that. I doubt we were ever in a lead share group together.
No.
So it's like an informal circle that I have all the time, because when people ask me for something, I know exactly who to refer them out to. And it's great because it's such a great synergy. It's a win-win for everybody. And but that stuff does take time. Right.
Yeah.
Like you have to really get to know somebody to be able to feel comfortable with the referral. You get the first test referral, right? It kind of goes both ways. You get a test referral too, and people see how you perform.
Yep.
And then from that, then you can kind of blossom into a more regular relationship. But
yeah,
again, it still goes back to, you know, knowing who your best customers is first to figure out who can lead you there, and then building a relationship with those people. So you see how this all works? Like big circle.
Yes. Circle. You have to create your circle of life. So
for your business,
because that also then becomes a value add to your client. If you've got somebody that you can, you know, introduce to them, and then, you know, you guys are all working together, so everybody's familiar with your customer, your client. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't see a downside to it.
No, not at all. You would hope that your business is filled with mostly like your best customers at the end of the day. If not, we do have an episode on identifying toxic customers.
That we do.
And how to fire them.
Yeah. I don't remember.
We're all going to run into them.
Yeah. But you know what? You can look for it, because I don't know what the number is. But yeah, we did. Yeah. That was a great episode. Anyway, speaking of episodes, please join us for our next episode, where we will discuss influential business persons in history, why we're drawn to them, and what we gleaned from them. Stay tuned.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to have to do some research, whereas Savannah is going to have a whole host of people, because history is her thing. Can I steal one of yours?
Yeah, I got a lot. please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. And until next time, mind the business behind your business, because all great businesses or successes start small.